Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Beth Fox.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. Our guest today is Beth Fox. She's the board president of Rehumanize International, a nonprofit dedicated to building a culture of peace and life by opposing all forms of aggressive violence against human beings. Beth's story is deeply personal. Before she was even born, doctors advised her mother to have an abortion due to medical risk and a poor prognosis. Today, Beth lives with multiple rare life-limiting disabilities, yet she is a public health professional, speaker, and advocate who believes strongly that every human life is worth protecting, from conception to natural death. Beth, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
So looking back now, do you see a connection between a culture that accepts abortion for disability and the despair that many disabled people experience later in life?
Absolutely. I think that if we devalue the lives of people with disabilities at any stage, at any life stage, whether that be the very beginning, the very end, or anywhere along the life spectrum, that it's hard for people with disabilities not to generalize that to themselves anywhere else on the life spectrum. Yeah. If we are telling people with disabilities that people like them don't deserve to be born, or people like them should be ending their lives early, then it's hard not to generalize that and say that, why should I be alive now? And that absolutely builds onto that feeling of being less than, and that feeling of being a burden. And this isn't exactly the question you asked, but when it comes to the other end of the life spectrum with assisted suicide, there becomes a double standard then when you do fall into that despair as somebody with a disability, but then you're offered assisted suicide instead of medical professional help and suicide prevention. And that double standard that exists for people with disabilities in many countries and many states tragically takes the lives of many people with disabilities prematurely.
Absolutely. I definitely think there's a connection. I agree with you. There's definitely a connection when our society, our culture doesn't value unborn life. It's so easy to just translate that to any life that doesn't look like mine. Unfortunately, that is the state of our world. Some areas and some countries worse than others, but we have to change that.
Absolutely.
We definitely have to change that. I don't know how it begins. Maybe it's just conversation. People are hearing us talk. Hearing your story, you know, you could not have been here, but you're 33.
Yep.
And we're going to pray for 34.
Yes. So,
well, one case many listeners may remember is Terry Schiavo. When did you first hear about her story?
I vaguely remember hearing about that when I was a late teen, but I didn't fully understand what was happening. But I learned more about it while I was in college. That's when I really became, when I really understood what happened, and learned the real facts of the case and not just what the media was reporting. But yes, I remember being horrified by that case, and especially because I could, that as somebody who is already severely disabled, related very, very strongly with her.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were terrified. I remember just kind of hearing it, you know, myself, and I'm going to say living through it. I'm a little older than you are. Very definitely formulated or helped formulate people's opinions or ideas of, you know, the end of life questions and things that have to be decided. What message do you think society sends or sent when we talk about the way Terry's life was discussed and ultimately ended?
I think, again, there's a big devaluing of people with disabilities because so often she's described as being a vegetable or in a vegetative state. And when you look at the actual facts of the case, like that wasn't
nice.
That was the case. She wasn't even in a coma. She was mostly conscious. She just wasn't able to physically express herself very well. And the fact that we equate that level of severe disability with a vegetative state or a coma, and then using the derogatory term of calling somebody a vegetable, it is dehumanizing. And then once we dehumanize, it's much easier to make the case for why their life has less value why it's time for their life to end.
And you know, we mentioned the term dehumanize, and that's so often, I don't know that many people would probably say I'm dehumanizing, but it's exactly what we're doing. It's whether it's the unborn, whether it's disabled, we make them less of a person than they are.
Yeah. I don't think people do it intentionally.
Yeah.
But it's like many other forms of prejudice. It's not often intentional, but that doesn't mean that it's any less harmful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Wow. Another widely known and more recent case is Charlie Gard. This is a baby whose parents wanted to pursue treatment, but the courts overruled them. Mm-hmm. What stood out to you when you first learned about his story?
To me, it was terrifying that the courts were basically ruling that his life had so little value that he would have such terrible quality of life that his family couldn't raise funds or spend their own funds to get treatment. Like, I understand that in countries, I understand here, insurances are going to deny certain procedures. And I understand that in countries with universal health care, they're not going to be able to approve every procedure. I don't like it, but I understand it. Mm-hmm. But for a court to rule that a family can't use their own funds and can't raise funds to take their dying child somewhere to get treatment, that was mind-boggling to me. To say that this child doesn't even deserve the chance, that it's not even, that he's not worth us spending our resources on, which is frustrating enough, but it's that we equate a life with disability so much as a life of suffering that we're going to refuse to let his family try to extend his life. And again, very frightening the ramifications that could have for the future for people with disabilities.
Absolutely. I think for me, everything you said, but the fact that the parents were overruled, the court system said, no, we're not going to let you. You know, I have two girls, and I think about if the government, you know, said, no, you can't provide care for your child, we would be in an uproar. I would be in an uproar. And once again, it goes back to the value of that baby's life.
Mm-hmm.
That people didn't feel like that baby's life was valuable, or that he wouldn't have a good life. And which made it, I'd say easy, but it made it possible for them to overrule the parents' decision, the parents' heart to care for their baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. What parallels do you see between Charlie Gard's case and the assumption that doctors made about your future quality of life before you were even born?
I think that both decisions were based on the fact that, or based in the assumption that if we survived, we would face a life of extreme suffering.
Yeah.
And I wish that Charlie had been given the same opportunity that I had to prove them wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I believe Charlie lived just shy of a year without the treatment that he perhaps could have received to extend his life. Sometimes I don't know what to say. You know, just I'm just kind of speechless sometimes.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview, and it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today.
Welcome back. I'm Toni Clark. You're listening to Life Matters. Today we're talking with Beth Fox, board president of Rehumanize International, about abortion, assisted suicide, and the importance of human dignity from conception to natural death. Beth, how do abortion, assisted suicide, and cases like Terry's and Charlie's all reflect the same underlying worldview?
I think it all kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that they're all kind of based on that dichotomy, that the worldview that we're better off than the disabled, that most able-bodied people, and I've had able-bodied people say this to my face often in a way that they think it's coming as a compliment, that they say, like, if I couldn't live the way you do, implying that I am somehow stronger than them. But every time I hear that, I know that they're advancing this worldview that my life is somehow so miserable that most people couldn't endure it. And that's just not true. The reality is that it doesn't take super strength to live a life like mine. It's just that it's the only life I've ever known. And I'm not living in suffering. Yes, there is hardship and adversity, but there's not tremendous suffering like so many people seem to think that there is.
Yeah.
And so that worldview that we're better off dead than disabled, or that it somehow takes tremendous strength to endure the incredible suffering that all disabled people face.
Yeah.
I think that is the worldview that most people are, that who are advocating for these things, that's the lens that they're looking through, that they're somehow preventing tremendous suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that's just not the case, that our lives are every bit as valuable and full of love and joy as everybody else's.
Yeah.
And everybody faces adversity and hardship of some kind. It's just that when you have a disability, it's you wear that hardship on your sleeve, and it's on the surface for everybody to see. You can't tuck it away like a lot of people can, but that doesn't mean that
it's not there.
It doesn't mean that we necessarily face more hardship than other people. We just can't hide it like others, and that's maybe not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. 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 I guess I have so many questions for you. I was thinking about what I hear in the pro-life movement from people that will say, well, you know, first of all, they have an idea of, you know, what the pregnant young lady looks like and what kind of life she lives. And so then they talk about, well, wouldn't that baby be better off not here than being perhaps born into the foster care system or into a rough family life? And I listened to that and I'm like, first of all, who says that that baby has to end up in foster care? You know, who says that that baby has to have a less than life? And why do you think it'd be better for them not to be here? You know, just
exactly.
Yeah. And so, and I think that's the, you know, we're talking about, you know, living with a disability in the pro-life, you know, world. Those lines become blurred when we dehumanize life at any stage. Mm-hmm. Because if it's easy for me to say, well, you have a disability and you shouldn't be here, then it's a little easier for me to say, well, you might be born into the foster care system, and so you probably shouldn't be here either.
Exactly.
And I think that's something, I mean, I just said it, but I think if we're not careful, that's the mentality that we, I will say to a certain extent, that's where we are.
Yep. And then it's how far do we keep pushing that line at that point?
Yes. Like, yeah. Yeah. I think back to Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, you know, her, I probably need to do a program on that, but her desire was to get rid of the less thans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it starts. But
yep.
All right. A couple more questions for you. Hospice and palliative care are often confused with Hospice and palliative care are often confused with assisted suicide. From your perspective, what's the key difference?
Yeah, I think this is so important. So the big difference between hospice and palliative care and assisted suicide is that, first of all, palliative care, at least in the U.S., palliative care isn't just end-of-life care. Palliative care is something that anyone with a severe chronic illness can receive at any time during their illness to help with symptom management, even while they are continuing receiving treatment. Mm-hmm. Hospice care comes in when there are no longer curative options available, or you're done seeking curative options.
Yeah.
And the main difference between hospice care and assisted suicide is that with hospice care, you're no longer actively seeking seeking curative measures to extend your life. But you're also not actively seeking to shorten your life.
Yeah.
With hospice, the goal is to give you as many days and as many good days as mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. So they want to do whatever they can to extend your life, but mm-hmm. not at the cost of quality of life. Mm-hmm. So the primary focus is quality of life, but they won't take any measures that would actively decrease the length of life.
Right.
Whereas assisted suicide is taking an active measure to end your life, mm-hmm. prematurely before natural death would come in. Mm-hmm. Hospice comes in and gives you the best quality of life you could have and the most comfort you could have until mm-hmm. your natural death. And they yeah. don't do anything to hasten natural death.
Right.
Assisted suicide is you choosing when to die through the act of taking medication prescribed by a doctor to end your life.
That's good. I just recently had palliative care explained to me, very similar with the family issue that I'm dealing with. And because when we hear those terms, we just automatically think end of life, and palliative care doesn't necessarily mean, you know, but I thank you for explaining that. I think we just need some clarity sometimes on those issues.
Yes.
And I guess to kind of tidy that up a bit, hospice care affirms dignity.
Yes, absolutely.
And when cure is no longer possible, But assisted suicide, literally,
there's a reason that they've started calling it medical aided dying, and that's because they don't want to call it what it is.
Yes.
Assisted suicide is what it is. It's suicide.
Yeah.
And people advocating for it don't want to call it what it is anymore. And so that's why they've started calling it medical aided dying instead. Yeah. But yeah, it is what its real name says that it is. It is suicide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so in a culture that values efficiency and control, what can hospice teach us about patience, presence, and love?
Hospice teaches you really the importance of valuing every day and every moment that you have. And connecting with the people around you, connecting with your community, leaving whatever legacy you can, and making the best memories that you can in the time that you have.
Yeah.
And focusing on having the best quality and comfort of life that you can have during that time. And so, I mean, the focus really is on all of those things that you just mentioned, love and patience, and it. To sit by somebody who is on hospice requires so much love and patience, as dying is hard, and it's not a pleasant experience for anybody. But it's also, I have said it so many times over the past few months that I would never wish a terminal illness on anybody. But I do wish that everybody could experience dying the way that I have, because I have had so many friends and family and community just come out and surround me. And I've experienced so much love and joy. And I wish that that was how everybody got to spend their final however much time I have left, being surrounded by people who truly love and cherish them, and making valuable memories and fighting to make the world a better place for the people they leave behind.
Absolutely. I have a few friends that in the past 6-7 years or so have walked alongside them as their parents have been perhaps placed on hospice care. And I would say, to a fault, they have all pretty much said it was a gift, that they were able to be around their family and, you know, knowing that their family member was being taken care of. But they were able to, you know, talk about legacy and just see the love for even the hospice. You know, they always talk about the love that the hospice workers have for their family members. And I just think that's a sweet parting. And so it is somewhat of a gift to the family, but as well to the person that's on hospice care.
Yes, absolutely.
That's good. As someone who was once told that your life wasn't worth living, what has kept you fighting over the years?
So one of the biggest things is I learned that over 98% of children with genetic conditions like mine don't make it to birth. Either they're stillborn or they are lost to abortion. And so for a long time, I struggled with, well, why did I make it?
Yeah.
And that has given me a lot of determination to do whatever I can to make this world a better place. Because I don't think that it's an accident that I'm here. I do think that I'm here for a purpose. So I use whatever strength and voice that I have to advocate for my many brothers and sisters who did not make it,
to try to make the world a better place for those of us who did, because we still have a long way to go to make the world more accessible, and to hopefully make the world more accepting so that that rate of children lost to abortion hopefully goes down in the future.
All right. If you want our listeners to remember just one thing from your story today, what do you hope it is?
That disability does not equal suffering. And that just because our lives might look different or harder than yours doesn't necessarily mean that they are. And it certainly doesn't mean that our lives are not worth living. And that every life at every stage of life is valuable and worth living.
All right. Where can our listeners learn more about Rehumanize International and follow your work?
You could follow Rehumanize on pretty much every social media platform at Rehumanize INTL. And you can follow me. I am at pink_vulpine, VULPINE. It's the scientific name for fox, which is my last name.
Hi, so Beth, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I am so encouraged by your courage, grateful for you, your clarity, and your commitment to affirming the value of every human life.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.